Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen and I am joined today by a man we haven't had on since the summer months. It is Dalton Miller. How are you, Dalton?
I'm good. I'm doing well. Busy, but it's football season, so it's a good time of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. You are one of the busiest people I see. You obviously do your great work with the Blue Chip Scouting Podcast, but you also do Around the Star. Am I getting the name of that correctly?
Talking the Star.
Talking the Star. Yeah. I have watched that once or twice. I just do not know the name off the top of my head. I have done my research. But you are a very busy man, and thank you for taking some time out of your day to quickly talk with us, because the Cowboys had a big game this week, and I thought it might be nice to get your kind of perspective on it. So I wanted to start with something not on our agenda really quickly that we could spend a pretty short amount of time on. But you, I think, are one of the best people on Twitter to follow if you're really into statistics. You get really into statistical knowledge and terminology. And I wanted to ask you, and for our listeners, just kind of a term that is becoming a lot more used in football coverage is DVOA. Now, I would like to ask you kind of what that means and if you could explain it to our listeners, because I sort of get it on a very basic level. Here's my understanding of it, and you tell me if I'm right or not. It's a calculation of yards, but they're weighted based on the situation within the game.
All right, so it's a way to measure. So do you know, have you heard of what EPA is?
No.
So EPA is estimated points added. So what DVOA is, here's the ultra short version of it, okay? It's measuring team efficiency, and it compares the success of every single play throughout a given season and creates an average for that. And then how your team performs is either above or below that. So on offense, positive numbers are good. The higher the positive number, the better your offense is. On defense, however, like the New England Patriots for a long time had a DVOA of around negative 40 when it comes to the defense, which is pretty historic when it comes to how good that defense was. Now, the little bit longer version of it is it takes into account every single NFL play and then bases it off a league average. All right. So it's not just yardage. It's yardage towards first downs. It's, you know, it's got a different value, much like EPA does on a 5-yard run from the opponent's 10 compared to a 5-yard run from your own 10. So it's based off of the situation that the offense is in, first down, second down, third downs. If you're able to pick up a first down on the given play, you get points at, not points added, but value added to that off of that as well. So it's a really in-depth statistic. It's not one that I normally do a lot with, because it is one of the more in-depth ones that I haven't really done a ton of studying with, but that is what I do know about it. If you want to know everything about it, you can go to Football Outsiders. They're the ones that kind of created it, and they have a huge glossary of it.
Oh, absolutely. Well, go check that out. And then my second question, if you were to give – a stat that you're using a lot right now that the average football fan might not be aware of, what would that stat be?
That would be EPA, and that's estimated points added. So what that does, it's kind of like DVOA, but it's the number that I've been using. That one, and then CPOE as well is another big one to look at quarterback play specifically, because that is completion percentage above or over expectation. So there's an expected completion percentage for each portion of the field.
Okay.
Not each portion, but each specific spot of the field. So if you have a completion percentage that is below what your expected is, then you are not completing as many passes as you are supposed to. Now, if you have a higher completion percentage than what you are expected to. That means that you are completing, most likely you're completing passes at a higher rate further down the field than your peers are.
So it's COPE?
CPOE.
CPOE.
Yep. And then the other one is EPA, and it's kind of like DVOA in that it takes every situation upon itself. And I actually wrote about it for the website, and I have a big breakdown of exactly what it is there if you guys want to read about it. It's pretty in-depth.
So who leads the league in CPOE right now?
So I believe the CPOE leader right now is Drew Brees.
Okay.
And it's not that he doesn't qualify for a lot of them, but because he missed those couple of weeks, a lot of people don't actually put him in the rankings. So I believe I'll go to Ben Baldwin's page right now because I know that he has it. But I believe Dak Prescott is number two in that category. Number one might actually be Kirk Cousins, but I'm going to have to check that to make sure.
Okay.
And then what they do, what Ben does specifically, is he has a composite score for CPOE and EPA, and he averages out those two. And that is what he calls the Dakota stat. And the Dakota stat is one that Dak Prescott has led the entire year. He is actually – he's third in CPOE behind Drew Brees. And I'm trying to see who's second on the list here. Ryan Tannehill, but he hasn't had the amount of reps to qualify. So it's Dak Prescott in CPOE, and he is second in EPA per play behind Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes was out for a couple weeks as well. The real big one with Dak Prescott is success rate. So success rate is getting 40% of – or 50% of a first down on first down. So from first to 10 to first and five. And then on second down – it would be getting 70% of a first down. So if you're at second and 10 and you get 7 yards, that's deemed a successful play. And then on third and fourth downs, it's 100%. So right now he has the highest success rate of all time for a quarterback.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Where can people find stats like CPOE?
Yeah, so CPOE you can find, I believe CPOE is a part of Pro Football Reference.
Okay.
And that is under the advanced passing category for no, that is not. It might be ESPN. Oh, it's Next Gen Stats. Next Gen Stats has CPOE on it.
All right. And
so good resources are Next Gen Stats, Pro Football Reference, Advanced Passing Statistics, Football Outsiders. Those are all three really good ones.
Oh, all right.
And then another good one, if you want it, is Player Profiler, and that is Roto World's website for advanced statistics.
Yeah, because I am honestly just definitely curious, especially when it comes to quarterback stats. I really love watching quarterbacks. It's kind of my favorite position to watch. So that does sound like a really interesting stat, and it's so. Can I parrot what you've said to me just to make sure I'm have the right understanding of CPOE? It is the completion percentage to a certain spot on the field that is either below or above what the expected average of that pass should be.
Yeah, so each pass has a value, and Then you complete it or you don't complete it, and it goes against that value. So because Dak Prescott, a lot of his targets, he might be first in the league in average error per attempt, which is just how far your passes go in the air that you attempt. So I'm trying to figure out how to explain this easily. It is how far the ball literally travels before it gets in your receiver's hands or goes incomplete. So, like, target depth, his target depth is longer than most people's. And I don't want to say it's first because I can't, you know, get that stat on the fly right now. But he was in the top five. Him, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Jameis Winston were at the top of that one. And then Matt Stafford was pretty high up there as well.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that was good statistical talk, and thank you very much for humoring me. I always find those type of things really interesting because I, in my writing and my podcasting, I judge a ton off of what I see with my eyes, but I'm always fascinated by the statistics behind it as well because I always think those are a nice way to bolster your argument. Let's get into the Cowboys. And I want to start with a statement and tell me if you agree with this or not. The Cowboys, despite having one of the most talented coaching staffs in the entire NFL, seem to me to be one of the most poorly coached teams in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they have one of the most talented coaching staffs in the NFL. I mean, when you look at it,
I think Moore's good, and I think Chris Richard, that the defensive guy, I think both those guys are really good and should be kind of.
Moore is very good. Moore's great. John Kitna, the quarterback coach, is fantastic. If they were looking at a new head coach, I would legitimately think about making him the interim head coach and then possibly even giving him a shot after. They're not going to fire Jason Garrett in season, but, you know, John Kitna would be a possible replacement there. I think there's a reason Chris Richard didn't continue on in Seattle. They no longer required his services, and I think that there was a reason for it. This defense in Dallas is playing pretty poorly. The secondary, and specifically Chido Awuzie, is playing very poorly. And that scheme itself is really, really bland. It's a lot of cover three. It's a lot of Tampa two, and it's a lot of man coverage. There's not a lot of eccentricity in the defense. There's not a lot of rotation. There's not a ton of blitzing. Their blitzes are pretty easy to not pick up, but they're pretty simple. It's just Jalen Smith coming off of the edge or down the middle. They really just want to line up and beat you, and it's not working.
Yeah, you make a really good point about their secondary. I think their front seven, that's more of a part that I was kind of referring to. I think the front seven's been excellent the last few weeks. DeMarcus Lawrence particularly has kind of turned it on. But you're absolutely right. The secondary is just not – it is not up to snuff with some of the top units in the NFC right now.
Yeah, and the linebackers are playing poorly as well. It's been a real regression from both Jalen Smith and – LVE this year, and Jalen has had his flashes of good games. He's been really hot and cold from a game to game basis.
I would argue Van Der Esch has too. He's had a few good weeks that have really stood out.
And I don't want to say that LVE has just been bad because he hasn't. He hasn't been bad in his bad games like Jalen has, but he's had his off games as well. The big one is Sean Lee. When Sean Lee is forced to play the Sam role instead of playing his normal will, because when he came in for LVE, when LVE was hurt last week, he played well. Sean Lee was good at the will because he's a natural will linebacker. Going over to Sam and trying to play physical and come off blocks and blitz the passer and cover tight ends, that's just not what he does. And he got exposed against Kyle Rudolph in the red zone twice.
So I want to kind of walk through kind of the end of that game. Obviously, they go to Zeke a bunch, and then they never really target Amari Cooper, who I don't know where quite to put him in the conversation of best receivers in the league, because to me, I think he's struggled with drops at points this year. But playing like he did last game, where, and you being someone who has watched him all year, where do you think he ranks as far as in kind of that top tier of wide receivers goes? Is he kind of a top five wide receiver? Because I think when he's on, he is, but he also has moments where he drops the ball. It seems to me, maybe I'm not watching it correctly, but I feel like he's had a ton of drops this year for some reason.
No, I mean, Amari Cooper is a guy who's always going to struggle with bouts of dropping the football at times. Now, in this past game, he made some absolutely incredible throws or catches on throws, you know, well out of bounds. That one in the end zone was 4 yards out of bounds, and he was completely, you know, extended on that one. You know, it's some of the easier ones. It's some of the ones where footsteps are coming. But honestly, the way that he is playing, I'll take it. If he's going to drop passes, but he's going to consistently go off. I mean, we're 9 games into the year. We're 5-4. He's got 848 yards receiving. He's caught 75% of his passes. He's first in DVOA. He's first in yards above replacement. I mean, the dude gets open at will against man coverage. I'll take the drops every once in a while because he's so good for this offense and so good for Dak Prescott, who really, you know, this year it's not been as important because Dak has become more comfortable as a passer, but somebody who can get separation is great for Dak Prescott, and Cooper does that.
Yeah. Let's move on to Dak Prescott, because you write a column about him every week that I occasionally look at, because Dak's a fascinating passer to me as well. I love quarterbacks. They're kind of what I watch the most on Game Pass and things like that. And it just feels to me, and I think you'll agree with this, but Dak the last 2 years was kind of a guy hovering around the middle of the pack as far as quarterbacks went, and he wasn't a detriment to his team, but he wasn't hurting his team. And it feels like he's taken a massive leap this year into being a true kind of top 10 quarterback. And frankly, unless he regresses immediately overnight, I feel like he, if he continues this run of play for the rest of the year, he will kind of cement his career status as a top 10 quarterback, because I just feel that's the way these things kind of work. You see, when you talk about guys like Ben Roethlisberger and Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson, they have these big years and then they might come back down to earth a little bit, but they never really drop back off. Is it safe to say he has kind of arrived as one of the league's premier passing talents? Because to me right now, this looks like the ceiling of Dak Prescott. I'm not sure he can get any better than this.
So I think that there are parts of the game mentally that he can still get a little bit sharper with. He is already one of, if not the best quarterbacks, pre-snap, changing plays, audibling out, and knowing what he is seeing. He's got a ton of autonomy. He's able to change plays at will whenever he wants to, and he's really good at it. With him physically, I never thought that he could get to this point. But the improved footwork that I didn't think was going to happen, working with John Kitna has done really well, and he's got more velocity on his ball now because he's doing a better job of keeping his lead shoulder, his point shoulder, tight and in for as long as he can. And what that does is it gets your hip rotation and your shoulders coming through at the end, which creates velocity. And so what happens is that really whips the elbow through the throwing lane or through the hallway and creates that velocity. And he's been able to really put zip on passes, especially over the middle, because if you look at his passing chart on Next Gen Stats from last year, You can put all of those together, and you'll see a big area in the middle of the field where they just didn't throw the football. And this year, where he has been most effective is over the middle. It's one, because he has confidence in what he's doing and throwing the football. And two, it's because he's got that added velocity to fit balls into tight windows.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that, honestly, when you look at the landscape of the NFL, you have a lot of guys on the downturn of their careers. When you look at quarterbacks, it's Patrick Mahomes, it's Russell Wilson, and it's maybe Deshaun Watson. And other than those three guys, going forward, I'm not taking any other quarterbacks over Dak Prescott. It's those three, and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a valid argument. I would say I understand where you're going looking into the future. I would still take guys like Aaron Rodgers over Dak Prescott. I think Rodgers is still in his prime, and I think he's kind of shown that throughout this stretch over the last few weeks, even though his numbers have kind of come back down to earth, especially against Carolina, where they were more primarily focused on a ground attack. But I wouldn't disagree with you. Dak Prescott is kind of starting to really establish himself as one of these stalwart guys. And the only question I have what you would probably consider dumb questions. I'd like to see him do it in the playoffs. Obviously, you can't ask that mid-season and put that as something there. But as soon as I see him have some success in the postseason, I absolutely – and I already agree with you already, but I'll just be that much more impressed. But the Cowboys, I feel like in a top-heavy NFC, they are in danger right now of kind of not missing the playoffs, but – I would say the Cowboys over the past three games have kind of shown me that maybe they're more of a bubble team. And that counts on the Eagles getting hot, which I think they will. But their schedule to the end of the year really interests me, because it's a pretty easy schedule. Aside from, I could see the Bills giving them trouble, and I could see the Patriots giving them trouble, but that's about it. Where do you see – this is a terrible way to get into a question because I rambled for a million seconds, but where do you see this Cowboys team right now? Does the loss to Minnesota, another one of these kind of – top NFC teams that is going to potentially be a wild card team because of the way the Packers are playing, worry you?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to win the division to make the playoffs. I think that either the 49ers, Seahawks, Packers, or Vikings, I think those are the teams that are going to be fighting for that those two wild card spots, and then the other two are going to win their divisions. So I think it's going to be one team from the NFC East. I think when you get down to it, it's going to come down to that Week 16 game with the Dallas Cowboys and the Philadelphia Eagles. I think that they're going to be, you know, either, you know, the Cowboys might have a one-game lead or the Philadelphia Eagles might have a one-game lead. They might have the same record at that point. And it's going to come down to that game because the Cowboys already beat them once. So even if they end up with the same record at the end of the year, if the Cowboys beat them again, it doesn't matter. They won the division. And all you need to do in the NFL, they tell you, is get into the dance. Now, recently, it's been only one or two seeds to make the Super Bowl set. I don't know the year offhand, but it's been the last 5 or 6 years, absolutely.
If I may interrupt, I don't buy that with Dallas, because I have a theory that when Dallas doesn't beat themselves, they are the best team in the NFL.
I don't think they're the best team in the NFL, because I think that the Patriots are still the best team in the NFL, and the Ravens actually terrify me. But the The Cowboys are one of the most talented rosters in the NFL, if not from top to bottom, the most talented. Their offensive line is phenomenal. Their receiving core is great. Their quarterback is playing at an MVP level. They have, you know, a ton of high-level assets in the secondary, first and second-round picks. A third-round pick in Jordan Lewis, but he would have been a second-round pick if it wouldn't have been for, you know, a domestic violence accusation before the draft. And then you have, you know, guys on like D-Law on the defensive line. You have a second-round pick who would have been a top-five pick in Jalen at linebacker. You have LVE who was a first-round pick. You have all these high talent-level guys, and they just can't play consistently good football.
Yeah, I think that kind of backs up the way I feel about him, because I feel like the Dak Prescott quote from a few weeks ago just rang so true to me. When they are not beating themselves, they can beat anyone in the league. That is just a belief that I hold with this team. I think they are that good, and I realize looking at this schedule, I may have put a little bit too much stock in being worried about the Cowboys schedule, because the Eagles schedule is much harder, especially over the next 2 weeks. They have the Patriots and the Seahawks, and that could just straight up knock them out of the division entirely. Because I don't see Dallas losing more than one game, and I think that game's to the Patriots. But I love the Cowboys. I want to let you know that I love the Cowboys. I know at the beginning of the year, I think I picked the Eagles to win the division when we did our division preview, and I am sad for your friend Matt Valianos that his team was not as good as expected in that very hopeful time in August, as most teams are hopeful in August. And hopefully we'll have him on tomorrow to preview the week a little bit. But we can move on now, but thank you very much for enlightening me with your Cowboys wisdom. All right, let us move on here to a team that scares you, the Baltimore Ravens, and talk to me about your fear of them.
All right, so that offense is absolutely incredible. When you have a weapon like Lamar Jackson, it doesn't matter if he's not the best passer in the world. He's not even close, and that's quite obvious. What he can do is he can beat you deep down the middle. He's got weapons that are able to do that, and he's generally accurate enough to get the ball to those tight ends who can box guys out. But when it comes to, you know, that rushing attack is unbelievable. Mark Ingram has been a huge addition to that offense.
He's been terrific.
He has been. And nobody is more electric with the ball in his hand than Lamar Jackson. Not a single person. Not Saquon Barkley, not Alvin Kamara, not CMC. Nobody is more electric with the ball in their hands than Lamar. He just moves differently. And it's scary, because when you have a quarterback like that who can run the way that he can, what are you supposed to do on defense?
Yeah, and he's developing too within the season, which is scary. Yeah. Because he, especially in that Bengals game, I watched that earlier today, one of his throws that most impressed me, I don't believe was a touchdown, but it was one of these seam kind of routes to Mark Andrews, where the Bengals linebacker comes flying through and he just sidesteps him. His pocket movement, which was kind of a weakness last year, has become so much better this year as far as awareness goes and where he moves in the pocket and kind of his footwork within the pocket. I think he can make those outside the number throws too. I think part of the reason we haven't seen that is because Marquise Brown has been dealing with injuries through most of the year, but he made an incredible throw to him for a touchdown kind of down the sideline against the Bengals this week. I I truly do not get the Lamar Jackson haters or the truthers out there that say, oh, Lamar Jackson can't throw, because it's just a falsity. I think he's developed as a passer tremendously, and it just scares me to think that this is only year two, and despite what we – and the fact that he has surpassed everyone in his quarterback class that was so hyped up going into this year, and I'm guilty of this. Like, he has far outclassed Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, Sam Darnold, all these guys, and the fact that this – could just be the beginning. I don't think this is the ceiling on Lamar Jackson, and that scares me as well as a team, as a guy with a team that he roots for in the AFC, because this team's scary. They absolutely are. Anything else on the Ravens?
I don't really think so. I mean, they're doing all this, and their secondary, which I thought was going to be good this year, really has not played well so far in the season. Now, they went out and got Marcus Peters.
They've improved over the past 2 weeks.
They went out and got Peters. My issue with Peters is he's the second biggest guesser in the NFL when it comes to playing the quarterback position, the first being Jack Rabbit. But when he guesses wrong, he gets beat badly. That hasn't happened yet for the Ravens, but when will it happen? Because he is a ticking time bomb. But when he gets a couple pick sixes, it's a little bit different.
All right. Okay. I wanted to keep this one a little bit shorter, so we'll skip the result that surprised us the most. And then I wanted to talk about kind of two games that we were interested in this week, as well as quickly looking at Monday Night Football, and I guess we'll start with Monday Night Football. Seahawks, Niners, what was kind of your biggest takeaway from that game?
So my biggest takeaway from that game is, first of all, DK Metcalf, I'm not going to, you know, dance on people's graves already about me being right about how good he was going to be, but he looks like a monster out there whenever he's got the ball now.
He's been this good since about – he struggled the first 3 weeks, but it was that the first time they played Arizona this year, he went to a different level and has not come back down to earth. He is playing truly dominant football right now.
Yeah, he's really good. And then the biggest takeaway I have from that game, I have two of them. Actually, I guess it's three. The San Francisco defensive line is incredible, and it's helping the rest of their defense. The other thing that I have is that Jadeveon Clowney was on a mission last night. And the third thing I have is that Jimmy Garoppolo is good enough to win, not to win you football games, but to win with in the NFL. If he's got George Kittle, if he's got Emmanuel Sanders, he is good enough to get the job done. But he had a lot of issues, and I know that he was pressured a lot, but when you haven't taken a ton of snaps in the NFL, which to this point, he still has not taken a ton of snaps in the NFL, you're going to have to work out the kinks when it comes to working against pressure, and he's just not there yet.
Yeah, that was probably the number one thing that concerned me, is the fact that, and you could put it on not having George Kittle. I don't put it on that as much. Just the fact he missed so many throws, like more than usual. And it's not good, because you thought the Arizona game was arguably the best game of his career, in my opinion. And I thought he had taken this real step forward, and he kind of regressed a little bit last night. And he, talking about overtime in the fourth quarter, he tried really hard to throw game-ending picks, basically, that were dropped by Seattle's defense. I'm not sure what he was seeing on those kind of crossing route throws where he was throwing basically directly to the Seattle linebackers, but the Niners, I have loved them for weeks on end now, but it is concerning to me that their biggest weakness might be their quarterback.
I think that their biggest issue is probably, oh boy, you know what? It might be. I mean, their running backs are good enough, and that run game is very good.
I don't think the running backs are an issue at all. I think Tevin Coleman has been great.
Is good.
I think Tevin Coleman has been great coming back from injury. That's the strength. The strength of the offense is the running game. The weakness is when you make Jimmy G throw and he's not throwing off play action.
Yes. No, I agree with that. I agree with that. And then when you lose Emmanuel Sanders, you have Deebo Samuel at receiver. And that's
I think he's been okay. He has been okay.
Rookie. The drops are an issue. And I think that the drops are kind of going to always be an issue with him. But he is another one of those guys who can route people up pretty much at will.
All right. Let's talk about it. Two games for each of us. I'll let you start if you want, actually.
Yeah, so I watched Browns and Bills, and it was sloppy. I mean, those two quarterbacks both tried to give the ball away as much as possible. And that's, you know, kind of getting back to our conversation about Lamar Jackson, is he has really ended up being the best quarterback from that draft to this point. Baker Mayfield has regressed big time this year. That scheme doesn't help him much. But when you have all the weapons that he does, there's really no excuse not to get the ball in the playmaker's hands. He is bad.
Yeah, he's bad. He's bad right now. But in defense of Baker, and I don't – maybe you – I don't know how much Baker you've watched this year. I'm a big Baker guy, so I've watched every Baker game. I would argue that Sunday was his best game of the year thus far. I truly believe that, and that's concerning – seeing that there were mistakes, but that really was his best game of the year.
No, yeah, I mean, I honestly, I haven't watched a ton of the Browns. I watched a little bit of them early to see what the train wreck was about, and Baker was just so horrible that it was tough to watch. So I'm gonna have to take your word for that one. But I mean, he had a better game. I don't know, man. I don't know. Josh Allen is
– Josh Allen is a problem. He has significantly regressed from even the first 3 weeks of the season. He came in and was actually, I would argue, what they needed him to be in the first three games, which was a game manager that, despite the numbers, really didn't give up killer picks. But he is he has regressed a ton from his rookie year, and the problems that were there his rookie year haven't gotten any better. He still overthrows guys on deep routes, like the most I've ever seen a
quarterback. Yeah, he's the worst deep ball passer in the NFL, and it's not close.
Which I truly don't understand, because I think his arm is great. He just lacks any semblance of touch.
Yeah, he has no touch whatsoever. I mean, I literally watched him at the Senior Bowl throw a dig towards the back of the end zone, and it landed seven rows deep in the stands. I mean, just an absolute missile. And the arm strength was fantastic, but the accuracy was nowhere to be found. But, I mean, those are two players with Baker and Josh Allen who, you know, Baker we thought was going to be a little bit more pro-ready. He had a really good year last year, threw for a ton of touchdowns, a rookie record for touchdowns. And then this year, Freddie Kitchens, and you know, he's had a ton of unlucky interceptions, but he's thrown a ton of passes that should be picked, and they aren't, from what I've seen, too. So, you know, Baker Mayfield is a problem right now. He is another guy who can't handle pressure. So, it's rough because he was my QB1 and I want him to be great, but
it's kind of thrown under the radar for the past 3 weeks because it kind of disappeared a few weeks ago. But people need to still be talking about how bad that line is because
it's terrible. Yeah,
they're still throwing I believe part of the reason he's so bad is last year when he was successful, he had time to set his feet and fire off these amazing deep balls. Making him a West Coast passer is not what Baker Mayfield is. That's just not his style. So I absolutely agree with you. For me, the first game was Jets-Giants. And I just wanted to talk to you as a Cowboys fan. I've got some bad news for you, Dalton, but if you want Jamal Adams this offseason, and it sounds like the Jets will listen, I truly believe that you would have to give up. I do not think asking for four first-round draft picks is too much, because as far as safeties that are playmakers goes, you can look at a guy – you look at a guy on my team, the Broncos. You look at Justin Simmons, a guy who's getting all-pro touts as one of the best safeties in the league. There is a difference between being touted as an all-pro – and being a game-changing safety, because there are few outside of maybe Derwin James at this point, and we haven't seen him this year, safeties that actually make plays. And Jamal Adams was in the backfield five times in this game, had a criminal strip sack against Daniel Jones, and was awesome in coverage. I truly believe four first-round picks is what you'd have to give up to get this guy.
Yeah, so they were asking for a first and two twos is what they were asking for.
I don't think that's enough. I think that is a steal. And if that's truly what they were asking for, I had heard two first. But if that's truly what they were asking for, I do not know why the Cowboys didn't do that immediately, because that is a steal for Jamal Adams, because at least he is worth two first-round picks.
Man, I really value those day two picks. I wouldn't have done it. And it's because, you know, with – You need to allow Jamal Adams to be the playmaker that he is. And I just don't trust the Cowboys defense, at the top to allow that to happen. So, you know, I was okay with them not doing it. I think that he is probably the best strong safety in the league, just because I don't really think that Derwin James is a quote unquote strong safety, because he does literally everything. But, I mean, I don't think any player is worth four first-round picks or three first-round picks, because those are three starters that you're supposed to be looking at. I think if you're talking about that, it's going to be one of the top, you know, three quarterbacks in the NFL, and that's about it.
All right. My second takeaway and my last takeaway was Daniel Jones, for as much love as he's gotten as far as yardage goes,
yeah, he's
almost
been bad.
Almost all of his yardage comes from yards after catch. Like, it is – this receiving core is not touted highly enough, because Darius Slayton is a baller. He has balled out for, like, the last 3 weeks. He has had one bad game in the span of the last five. Golden Tate is spectacular. Even Benny Fowler has kind of come into his own as a receiver for this team. But I don't see Daniel Jones as a bad passer, but when I see people saying he's like one of the best passers, he ranks 24th according to Sharp Football in yards per attempt. And I don't see the deep ball with him, and he is watered down Eli Manning a little bit. And the offense is much better with him as quarterback, but I'm not sure I buy that he is going to drive this franchise to great victories unless he has an extremely talented offensive core around him.
Yeah, it's going to take time for him to really get assimilated to the NFL, the speed of the game. Because he is late on pretty much everything that he does as a quarterback. He just doesn't process things quickly enough. And as a rookie, I really don't expect him to. The other issue with Daniel Jones is he's got a little Carson Wentz in him, where it's kind of the anti-Eli, where he holds on to the ball literally as long as he can to try to make the most out of every single play that he can. And at some point, he's going to have to learn that sometimes you just need to get the ball out so you don't get killed. And You know, last year at Duke, he had a broken collarbone. He's somebody who likes to run and has the ability to run because he's athletic enough. So I think that, you know, there could be injury concerns down the road with just because of the way Daniel Jones plays.
All right. Yeah, and the ball security is
terrible.
Simple, but God, even from the preseason to now, he has not improved at all and is just awful. Like, he doesn't throw picks. He loses killer fumbles. He's worse than Jameis Winston. He's worse than Jameis Winston when it comes to holding on to the ball, and that's impressive to do.
Yeah, Jameis is bad.
So, yeah, that's a real problem. My second game was Steelers-Rams, only one takeaway here. I know I praised Jamal Adams a lot, but Minka Fitzpatrick is just on another level right now as far as what safeties do. And he is worth every single pick they gave up for him. Because I think our philosophy on the draft varies a lot here from our conversation. But for a guy like Jamal Adams and a guy like Minka Fitzpatrick, you are going to find those type of guys once every maybe three or four drafts. And it is worth giving up whatever a team wants to secure one of those players.
Yeah, and with Minka Fitzpatrick, it's a little bit different because, you know, coming out, you know, he was very highly touted. I really liked him coming out. And, I mean, I love Jamal Adams, but they're different players. For Jamal Adams, you know, he's more of that box-type safety. Minka Fitzpatrick, somebody who can play in the slot, can play free safety as well. And quite honestly, I value that free safety position more than I do the box safety because they're more against the run. They're, you know, they're covering tight ends here and there. But they that ability to play that single high free safety and create turnovers, the way that Minka Fitzpatrick has created turnovers in Pittsburgh, when all we saw in the first, you know, part of the season without him and then even with the first game with him is them just getting toasted deep down the field. That Pittsburgh Steelers secondary was awful. And now we look at them and they have a backup quarterback who is not playing well, but that's
not good. Rudolph is bad.
Yeah, they're creating turnovers. They're getting easy points off of those turnovers, and then they're winning football games because their defense is playing well. Bud Dupree's playing well. It's been really fun to see that Pittsburgh Steelers team turn it around a little bit.
Absolutely. And then your final game, and I'll let you get out of here.
Yeah, man, my final game was the Kansas City Chiefs at the Tennessee Titans. And I really just wanted to talk about this one because of the way that Derrick Henry has looked in the past 10 weeks, 12 weeks, something like that. I think it was actually the back half of last year and then the first half of this year. He's looked like one of the best running backs in the NFL, and we were kind of thinking, you know, if we would ever see this. But with the new offensive system coming in, he's really kind of flourished, and with a better offensive line in front of him, he's the kind of guy who, if you give him a runway at 6'2", 240 or whatever he is, you don't want to step in front of him because he's fast too. And when you're fast and you're big like that and you can drop your shoulder pads, you don't want to try to tackle that because that is a ton of inertia coming at you. And then the other thing I would like to bring up is Marcus Mariota turns out was the problem. And Ryan Tannehill has played really well since coming in. So yeah. I'm excited to see what happens there. I still think that they maybe look to towards the middle parts of the first round to take a quarterback, or if one of the guys like Jacob Eason or Jordan Love fall to the middle of the second round, somebody who they can develop behind Tannehill for a little while.
Yeah, Tannehill to me seems like the perfect kind of bridge quarterback.
I agree with that, yeah.
Where they can spend that first round pick on potentially even some more wide receiving help outside of him, because in this game, AJ Brown was not good. He has had some good games this year. This was not one of them. He was kind of held in check, but this has been a really nice kind of career renaissance for Ryan Tannehill. And he's gonna, from just three starts, I just got this gut feeling he'll be in the league for like another 7 to 8 years. So
yeah, and there were times in Miami where he looked good. I mean, he just could never stay healthy.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens there. Does this worry you at all for the Chiefs? Because to me, it does. Because their greatest advantage was going to be a bye, and I do not see any way they get that at this point.
No, I mean, the Ravens are going to kind of have to stumble a little bit. But, I mean, it was his first game back, so I think they'll –
I'm not saying Patrick Mahomes was bad. I thought this was actually this was a great game. He was a little bit rusty to start off, and I don't think he's at the height of his powers right now. And that's crazy to say, seeing as he had like 400 yards passing. But I just feel like they are a little bit hurt right now, and they cannot afford to lose another game because sneakily the Raiders have a pretty easy schedule. And if they were ever to find a way to beat the Chiefs, the Raiders could kind of pickpocket the division from them, honestly, if they lose another game, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see them missing out on the playoffs, even if somehow the Raiders do end up winning this
division. They're a playoff team for sure. I just think the division is kind of up in the air, which is weird to say. But
their defense is bad. I mean, that the Chiefs' defense is really bad. I mean,
the secondary has improved. The linebacking has not.
No.
It is – you're right. They've got some problems. All righty. Well, is there anything else you'd like to leave us with? Any grand thoughts about the NFL that you believe we are due to see in the next 6 to 8 weeks?
I don't really think so. I mean, every week I've been kind of coming back and watching Jeffrey Simmons, defensive tackle for the Tennessee Titans. He was one of my favorite players coming out of the draft last year. Since coming off of the ACL, he's looked like a really good player. Already as a rookie. I'm really looking forward to see if Quentin Williams is going to be able to kind of turn it around, because he has not played well so far for the New York Jets. So hopefully he's able to kind of get it, because he's one of the most fun players to listen to in interviews in the NFL.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Why don't I want to give you a chance to shout out everything that you're involved in. I know there's so much, so I'll let you go with it. And after that, we'll sign off quickly for us at Endzone Pod on Twitter. Me at Eric18 Utah. We'll be back here with Matt tomorrow, previewing all the week. What is it now? 12 games? 11 games? It's week 11, right? I've lost track of
time. It is week 11.
I've lost track of time. I am slowly going mad due to this football season. But, yeah, should be a ton of fun. Dalton, I'll let you take us out with where people can find your stuff.
Yeah, you can find my stuff at bluechipscouting.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Dalton B. Miller. And you can find my podcast on Apple Podcasts. It's the Blue Chip Scouting NFL Draft Podcast. And then you can find my Cowboys specific podcast, if you want that for some reason, at the Blogging the Boys network of podcasts. It's called Talking the Star.
Awesome. Thanks very much, Dalton. We will see you again, maybe before the season ends. If not, we'll see you in the offseason. Peace out, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Bye.
Follow us on Twitter at EndzonePod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want a shout out on the pod, send an email to endzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.